This is an AMI podcast.
Hey, Dave Brown here. If you enjoy this podcast portion of our show, remember you can watch it live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. I'm just like that. January, up in smoke, in the books. On to February you go. Coming up in the second hour of the show, engineers from the University of Colorado, go Buffaloes, have developed a smart walk-in stick using artificial intelligence. Nelson Rago of Cool Blind Tech will share more on that story. And it's Tuesday, which means the last segment of the show is occupied by the weekly news quiz. Some fresh contestants joining the show this week. Alicia Yardley from AMI's HR department. Greg David from the marketing department. You know him. And you also know Alex Smythe, a regular fixture and co-host on this show. Just like you know Brock Richardson, he's here for a sports chat. Brock, if somebody ran a timer on the amount we've talked about each Canadian hockey team this year, we have disproportionately covered the Vancouver Canucks. And here we find ourselves yet again as the Vancouver Canucks traded their captain and center Bo Horvat to the New York Islanders yesterday.
Yeah, they did. And listen, this is not of a surprise to me. Bo Horvat is a talented hockey player, and his talents were being—I don't want to use the word wasted—but he wasn't getting the best opportunity in Vancouver, and so this was a move that I'm not surprised by. They got a few draft picks plus a few extra players: Anthony Beauvillier and Antu Ranta. And so I think this is good. I think this is a step where you can look and say, Vancouver's, you know, finally sort of agreeing to this rebuild. I think everyone was like, well, maybe if you build around Bo, well, that's no longer the case. And I think this is a good move if you're Vancouver and looking up and up, hopefully for the future, if you are a Canucks fan.
Their head of hockey operations, Jim Rutherford, essentially telegraphed this move in his press conference a few weeks ago. He talked about making a trade that would bring immediate help to the team. So you mentioned Anthony Beauvillier, who is a decent sort of third line NHL hockey player with a little bit of skill that could potentially put him into the top six of your forwards when need be. Antu Ranta, the Finnish prospect who they acquired, he in his draft year in 2021 was initially projected to be a top 10 pick before sliding all the way down to the 52nd pick in that draft because he just could not produce offense in the Finnish Elite League. He really struggled as a 17 and 18 year old to put points on the board. And finally, last year, he had a bit of a breakout in the men's league, in the Finnish Elite League, posting more than a point a game for the first time in his career. And somewhat that continued down in the AHL and the minor leagues for the New York Islanders affiliate. So there is something there in Antu Ranta that could be a building block piece for the Canucks. So that's a nice little piece of return. It's a project. It's not a guarantee that he's going to develop into what some scouts thought he could be. But there is something there. Clearly, when he gets put in the right position, he is someone who can produce when he's comfortable. And Beauvillier is a good player. He's just a good hockey player. He's fine. He's someone who's under contract for a few more years. He's someone that they can utilize every day in their roster. And as this rebuild continues, they can potentially ship him out at a future trade deadline. And getting a first-round pick, it's a conditional first-round pick. The condition being, if it's in the top 12 this year, it gets moved over to next year. If it's not, it goes to the Canucks this year. So they've got a situation here where they acquired a nice little haul for a good player in Bo Horvat. So, Brock, I've got two elements that I want to tug at this trade for you. Number one, now that the Canucks have made one trade, do you believe there's another one coming down the pipeline? Do you think someone like a Brock Besser or a Connor Garland may get moved out as well as part of this rebuilding?
I think you're probably looking at Brock Besser being the next one. At least that's the one on my radar. And again, to your earlier point with this, Vancouver media wants to sell this as they got two, you know, first round picks with Atu Ratti, as you so eloquently put, and that's fine. But as you point out, it's a work in progress. So I don't think we're done here. I think we're looking at, you know, Brock Besser being the next sort of piece to go. And again, that's another player that, you know, ready to play. And so you're going to get some level of haul back, quote unquote. And I think that's what you're going to look forward to, but not most certainly not do I think the Vancouver Canucks are finished, because this is just the beginning of, you know, trade season in the NHL, and we'll see. But no, I don't think they're done at all.
Yeah, people might get mad at me. They're saying, oh, Brock Besser just signed an extension, you can't trade him. JT Miller just signed an extension, you can't trade him. Yeah, you can trade these people.
actually, the more someone is under contract, the more it is that you can get more viable pieces for that person, because the longer X team has those, you know, people under contract, the more they have to pay. So in my opinion, if we're going into the, you know, rebuild phase, yeah, this is, nobody's off limits here when you're in a rebuild situation.
Yeah. But again, I don't think Jim Rutherford, their head of hockey operations, wants to call it a rebuild. And I think there is some evidence in the kind of trade that he made here with Bo Horvat, where he's still looking to get some roster players back. So I wonder if there's not necessarily a super urgency in moving the Bessers or the Garlands or the Millers or even the Tyler Myers, unless he knows he can get back some what we'll call younger pro bodies. It doesn't seem like they want to go all the way in on a rebuild, which, by the way, is probably a mistake, but they believe that they have players like Elias Pettersson and players like Quinn Hughes that are the future of this team. So they've really, there's a risk here they're going to stay in the mushy middle.
Yeah, and that's the danger in which you play this kind of game with yourself, and it's like, what are we? Are we a rebuilding team? Are we mushy middle? And GMs and, you know, presidents of hockey operations tend to really have trouble with the idea of a rebuild. And so they try to get this whole, well, we're going to get players back. But yes, at the same time, Dave, you do have to look out for what's best in your organization. So roster pieces do help, but you do have to be careful that you don't get stuck in the middle and be there forever and a day. And you know, then you got annoyed Vancouver fans, and you know, you don't want that either, but you can't always go on the temperature of your fans either, because that can be a dangerous game to play as well.
Let's switch to the New York Islanders side of this, Brock. They currently find themselves on the outside looking in of the playoffs in the Eastern Conference. They're sniffing around. They're close, but they're a team that really struggles to score goals, to put up points, despite just an amazing year from their goaltender, Ilya Sorokin. Brock, do you think this is the kind of move that is going to help the Islanders push themselves over the ledge here and maybe knock Pittsburgh or Washington or the Rangers out for one of those later playoff spots in the Eastern Conference?
Is it a move that could get you into the playoffs, the bottom of the playoffs, easier? Yes. Is it a move that can make you, you know, be a Stanley Cup contender? No.
Yeah.
But it at least gives a little bit more of of your fans some, okay, we're kind of in this if you're the Islanders. You know, we got a goal scorer, which is something we're missing. We have the goaltending, as you mentioned. And I just think that, you know, at times we have to look at this and say, you know, we have to do this piece by piece, and this is the beginning for the Islanders in kind of seeing what they can do. Yes, a move like this can get them into the playoffs, sneak them in, but as for it being a Stanley Cup contender all of a sudden, not quite moving the needle in that regard.
Yeah, there's some teams sniffing around there. You've got the Islanders, you've got the Panthers, you've got even the Detroit Red Wings. They're sniffing just a little bit at those latter spots in the Eastern Conference. But to my eyes, Brock, it really feels like the eight teams that are currently in the playoff picture are the eight teams that will be there at the end, barring some kind of catastrophic collapse I don't see Washington or Pittsburgh relinquishing those wild card spots. I don't see the Rangers after a bit of a tough spot falling out of their zone. And the top three teams in the Atlantic, Tampa, Boston, Toronto, those teams are locked and loaded. So it's going to be a tough haul for the Islanders. But for a team who keeps trying to sell to their fan base, we want to give you some wins. It's the kind of trade you make. The price wasn't too high. So nice move all around. Brock, let's turn to the world of international sport. There's been some reporting and news bubbling around that Russia and Belarus are going to be welcomed back at the 2024 Olympics after being excluded from the 2022 games after the invasion of Ukraine. Brock, your reaction to this news?
I struggle with this one, and I struggle because I don't know when the right time would be to welcome them back to the games, and that's part of the reason I struggle is that, okay, if now's not the right time, when? And I don't have the answer for the when. As far as I'm aware, the war is still going on to some level. Maybe not to the height that it was.
It is. It's significant. It's a significant international conflict. Just because the mainstream media isn't covering it the way it used to be, it's still a significant conflict.
That's what I thought. And that's where I struggle, because if it's still a significant conflict, then are they welcome back? Are they relinquishing? Because the reason you didn't allow them was because of the war going on. And if it's still a significant conflict, then is now the time? I don't think so, but I also don't know when would be the time. I just think we need another rotation of a games, see where things are at. I think it's too early, especially knowing that it's still a significant conflict, even though the media is not covering it as much as they were, which is kind of sad in the end. But, you know, here we are.
It's a difficult question when you're considering the role of international sports, because it's not supposed to be an ethics or morals contest as to who gets involved. There were countries like Nazi Germany who were welcome at Olympics in the 20th century. There are plenty of corrupt countries engaged in illegal warfare, like Saudi Arabia, what they're doing to the people of Yemen, who have been welcomed at plenty of international sporting events, including the most recent World Cup. So there are countries that got to host World Cup, despite significant human rights abuses. So the one thing that keeps coming up here when we're talking about international sports is, can you be agnostic from the rest of international affairs? And there's probably something to that at the end of the day, if you're concerned that countries are going to be sports washing their reputation via competition in these kinds of events, then that's probably a broader concern about the nature of sport and these events more generally. But there does come a certain point where you have to say, as international governing bodies, that what are we? Are we some kind of moral or ethical police that says you can or cannot compete in these events because of the actions of government? And if that's the case, then you have to start applying that lens very, very stringently. I hope you don't think that I'm engaging in a game of whataboutism as I'm doing this exercise, but it does matter that you can't just pick and choose when you're going to be applying a moral or ethical lens to international sport.
And I think, to your point, and the thing that crossed my mind even before you started, is we all have to remember that if you were to take a lot of these athletes in, you know, rooms and say, you know, what do you think? They're going to say, I don't agree with it. And so at what point are we punishing athletes for things that they don't agree with and, you know, they're not supporting of? And I think that's part of the question, is that you're right. At what point do the Olympic committees have to say, okay, we're doing too much, you know, political policing versus understanding what the level of the games are? I think they did an appropriate thing in saying that they couldn't go to the last few. That's fine. But at some point, you have to say, okay, well, this goes far beyond sport, and we're delving into a realm in our nature to be able to do, and we have to deal with in sports. And I'm going to use a line, and it's sort of tongue-in-cheek, but, you know, you often hear the line of, stick to sports. I think that's where the Olympic committees and Paralympic committees are kind of stuck in. Stick it in your lane. Don't cross over. You know, that's why when I started this and I said, is the war still going on? The truth of the matter is I don't see it on the news. I'm a sports guy. And yes, I do see headlines. But if it's not right in front of me, I'm not following it as in-depthly as I probably should as a human, but that's because I'm sports. So stick to your lane of sports if you're the Olympic and Paralympic committees.
Brock, speaking of sticking to sports, you are the host of The Neutral Zone, which airs Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Eastern time on AMI Audio and available for podcast a little bit later in the day. What do you and the crew have coming up on the show today?
We have Don Terry and James Titmarsh, who are both part of the organizing committee for the Parasport Games happening this weekend. Mm-hmm. So they give us a preview of what's coming up. Plus, we talk about when an athlete's beliefs need to cross paths into sports, as we discussed last week. So we talk more in depth about that this week on the episode.
Brock, thank you for this. Have a great show, a great day, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Thank you very much.
That is Brock Richardson, the host of The Neutral Zone. Alex Smythe is at the AMI Weather Desk.
Here is your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada. We're going to start off in Corner Brook, Newfoundland, where there's snow off and on today with 2 centimeters expected to fall. The high is -2, feeling like -12. In Charlottetown, PEI, it's mainly cloudy with snow beginning in the morning and up to 4 centimeters set to fall. The high is -3, still feeling like -12. In St. John, New Brunswick, there's snow off and on today with up to 4 centimeters falling. The high is -4 and feeling like -7 with the wind chill. In Quebec City, Quebec, it is cloudy, clearing this morning, and then it'll be sunshine as the day goes on. -11 is the high, feeling like -22 with the wind chill. Here in Toronto, Ontario, it is a mix of sun and clouds with possible snow early this morning. The high is -5, but with that wind chill makes it feel like -19. In Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, there is snow off and on today with a mix of sun and clouds. The high is -9, feeling like -23. In Brandon, Manitoba, it is mainly sunny today. The high is -21, but feeling like -40. There is an extreme cold warning in effect due to those cold wind chill temperatures. And that cold continues as we make our way to Regina, Saskatchewan, where there's a mix of sun and clouds. The high is -17, but with that wind chill, again, it's feeling like -35. And that extreme cold warning is in effect there as well. At Lethbridge, Alberta, it is cloudy with the clouds rolling in as the day goes on. There's wind gusts up to 70 kilometers per hour. The high is -3, but with those strong winds, it makes it feel like -20. In Red Deer, Alberta, there's snow off and on today. The high is -7, feeling like -14. Up in Whitehorse, Yukon, there's 4 centimeters of snow set to fall today. -8 is the high, and it's -15 with that wind chill. In Kelowna, BC, there's up to 2 centimeters of snow falling today, but then becoming cloudy as the day goes on. The high is -3. And finally, in Victoria, in Vancouver, BC, it's cloudy with a chance of snow in the morning, turning to possible rain in the afternoon. The high is 3 degrees. And that's your AMI National Weather Report from Environment Canada.
Thank you very much, Alex. Coming up next, engineers from the University of Colorado have developed a smart walking stick using artificial intelligence. Nelson Rago has some details on that one. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Engineers at the University of Colorado, go Buffaloes, are using artificial intelligence to develop a smart walking stick for people who are blind or partially sighted. Here to tell you more about it is Nelson Rago from Cool Blind Tech. Hey, good morning, Nelson. How you doing?
Doing great. How are you?
I'm well. So, Nelson, we know there's lots of smart sticks that are being developed. How does this smart walking stick work?
Well, this one is, like you said, coming from Colorado, so that's a new location. So this one looks very similar to your typical cane that you would have, with the exception of a couple of extra devices. So in this particular study, they'll have a camera that that has the algorithms and using computer vision technology to assess and help you navigate what's around you. And this one in particular had a laptop in a backpack that's connected to the person that was doing the study. And then that camera would look around and make an assessment of where you need to go, and it'll give you a vibration or haptic feedback in the cane handle, and it'll give you a spoken audio as well for instructions of where to go.
So in terms of the research, the researchers created a couple experimental locations, including a cafe. What did they want to study inside the cafe?
Yeah, so they get the sighted volunteers to do a little study. Like they have a little lab that was set up, and in the lab they set up tables and chairs, typical setup that you have in cafe, and they use this technology to see if they can traverse around the chairs and find an ideal place that someone would sit. There's a YouTube video on it, and they were talking that maybe most blind people would want their back to the wall for some reason, and being in a location that's suitable for a blind person. So I'm not sure how they came up with that, but they did figure they did have 10 successful attempts at sitting in a chair that they wanted to sit, and then they had two mishaps, but they didn't go into detail of what happened to those two. So for the most part, it was a successful demonstration.
Beyond a cafe, they also created a fake grocery store, an experimental grocery store. What was involved in that part of the study?
Yeah, they set up a little grocery store shelves, and on the shelves they had a collection of cereal boxes. They had a predetermined database of the products, and then they used the camera and the laptop and the similar algorithms that are in the laptop. It's actually similar to those automatic navigation systems that they have in cars. So they're using actually the same technology here. And then the camera will look at to see which cereal box that you're looking for. And then you'll use the directions to tell you to go move a little bit to the left, to the right, and it'll get you to the cereal box that you're looking for, and hopefully it's the right one. And then, and then you'll have to figure out how to get to the cashier. But I mean, they're getting you to the product, which is pretty cool.
Any word on a potential release date for this particular product?
Yeah, so as I mentioned, like they had a laptop and a backpack, so they do want to miniaturize this. So they want to utilize a smartphone to do the heavy lifting. The back end stuff. So it's, you're not walking around with a laptop in your backpack. So as soon as they get that figured out and make it more palatable for everyday users to use, they're going to eventually market to the public.
So what you're saying is the timeline is a ways away. No crossing.
Yeah,
it's a ways. Fingers.
Yeah, because. Yeah, if they're coming out with a name called Smart Walking Stick, you know it's a ways away.
Yeah.
They gotta have a name for it.
Not all the way there yet.
No.
Nelson, let's move on to your tech tip. You want to offer some advice on how to use the live transcribe function on Android devices.
Yeah, I was playing around with my Pixel the other day, and I know we talked about this before a couple of years later or years ago when they first released this. But it's pretty useful if you're a journalist or this is specific for people with hearing loss. But I started playing around with it, and it was pretty accurate. And basically what it does, it utilizes the microphone, and then it'll take that microphone, the audio from it, and it'll take the spoken word and transcribe it into text on your phone. And it's pretty accurate. It's a little bit tricky using it with TalkBack, but I mean, I don't think it was specifically for TalkBack users. But when I was reviewing the text on it, it was actually pretty good, and they made it really easy to turn it on and to use it. So if you go into settings, and under settings accessibility, and then there's a live transcribe, you want to select an open there, and then they even give you an option to create a shortcut. We could have a green button on the lower part of the right hand screen. And you could utilize it quickly in case you need to be able to communicate with someone. And there's also the option to actually save it as well. So if you want to keep it for future use, so it's a pretty cool function, and it's usable for phones all the way back to Lollipop. So if you have a newer phone, you're going to have this on your phone in accessibility settings. But if you can't find it there, you can go to the Play Store and actually download the app as a standalone app and install it on your phone and play around with it, see if it works for you.
Very good. Nelson, thank you for this.
Great. Thank you.
That's Nelson Rago, the founder of Cool Blind Tech. You can follow Nelson on Twitter at Cool Blind Tech, at Cool Blind Tech. Coming up after the break, Alex Smythe is curious. How do you support small business? What can you do to ensure small businesses thrive in your community? This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Nazreen Abdelmajid and Ramya Amuthan are standing by, but Alex Smythe has some thoughts about supporting small business.
Yeah, Dave, that's 100% true. You know, this weekend I was actually out and about with some friends, and we went and checked out an independent apiary and like small shop in town, and I have to tell you, it was the definition of a small business. You know, not only was it physically, the shop was small and quite quaint, but, you know, had a lot of locally made and sourced items in the shop and a few things that, you know, I had never seen or heard of before. And so I was happy to come in, drop some cash, pick up a few things, including honey soda, which I'm not sure if you've ever heard of this or anyone else on the panel have ever heard of this, but because it was an apiary, almost everything made with honey or beeswax and stuff. First off, it was delicious. It was amazing. It was unique. And so it kind of got me thinking, it's like, okay, well, you know, does anyone else have fun, unique stories or takes on small businesses and how they like to go and check out new places and get surprised by them? Because you don't find these types of experiences in the standard grocery stores or big box stores. So, Ramya, why don't we start with you? Like, do you have any experiences with small businesses that kind of surprised you a bit?
Yeah, when you said honey, I not necessarily surprised, but I think of how I always buy local honey. And I'm not sure when this started, but first it was like neighbors who say, hey, we know someone who sells honey, makes honey and all that kind of thing. And then maple syrup, anything really sugar related, I guess. But also farmers markets. This is another way that I support very local, especially obviously in the summertime. But I'm trying to expand even beyond that just to keep an eye on and ear on like where my produce is coming from, my meat is coming from, just anything that, because I love cooking, so I'm so in touch with my ingredients, and that's how I support most locally. But I wanted to shout out one particular example. It's not necessarily a farmer's market, but a market in general. We have the Evergreen Brickworks near where I live, in East York, like in Toronto, and they have incredible fun vendors come out all the time. I've gotten, like last year, I'm trying to think of examples. I've bought you know, anything like regular produce, but also produce that I'd never tried before, like garlic scapes for the first time. We'd also bought, you know, rhubarb honey and different ciders made of different fruits and berries. And it was very fun going there. And they're open every Saturday all year long. So great place to visit.
There we go. Ramya with the shout out. I like that. Using the platform to give people the love they deserve. Nazreen, you live in Hippie Town in Guelph, Ontario. How's life supporting a local in Guelph?
It's great. Honestly, it's really great. I love the small shops, and they have such unique spots. And I browse through the Guelph downtown, and there's so many little businesses, little coffee shops. You know that they're like family-owned coffee shops, and I love that so much. I also started, I mean, like since COVID, that's when I really started to notice the small businesses. Before COVID, it didn't really hit me. And during COVID, that's when I discovered there were so many small online businesses that are amazing. They're so talented. They're great gift giving, like ideas. I just remember my sister, for example, she started making coasters and she started selling them online. And it's really, it's an intimate gift, honestly. Mm. It's handmade. It's really personal. And if you give it away, that's what it is. And there's so many small businesses that are making clothing that is just so perfect. Like, you know, it's handmade. It's so special when you're giving a gift to someone else. So I've collaborated with so many small businesses in the last couple of years, and it's been truly amazing. And so, like, I would get a discount or whatever, and then I would share it online on Instagram, and that's how it would work. But yeah, it's super nice.
All right, so call me the outlier in this roundtable, because I'm three things, if anything. I am lazy, I am basic, and I am obese. So you put these three things together, and it becomes very difficult to support local when you live in a neighborhood that is primarily composed of chains. Pretty much anything walking distance from my apartment is a major chain or a regional chain. Yeah, I'd say regional chain is probably like the smallest of the businesses that pop up around here. Everything is super, super corporate. And here's the thing, as somebody who is legally blind and cannot drive, if you think that I'm taking the bus to go shopping, you are not thinking straight. I like to live my life inside a certain level of walking distance, which is probably why I'm considering moving out of this neighborhood, because I don't like living here, but I'm also lazy. You add laziness into this, and laziness will stop you from moving places. When I was an Ottawa resident in a really cool neighborhood, I was a little bit better at supporting local, but if it's not walking distance, I'm going to have a lot of trouble supporting it, even in terms of the online experience. If I find your website difficult to use, or I'm not crazy about creating 70 million accounts to buy things, it's going to dissuade me. It's going to stop me from doing it. And then you add in the fact that I am overweight in a significant way. I can't just buy clothes from an independent vendor. I need to go try my clothes on. Or if I'm buying something, it needs to be a major name that's mass produced that I know is going to fit my curvy body properly. So call me the outlier here. But Alex, what say you in regards to your experience? Maybe even like bringing in a little bit of that experience, because you do live in what I'll call a suburb of Toronto, although like not really a suburb of Toronto. It is its own kind of town. But where you're at, do you find it difficult to support independent business?
You know, it can be, Dave. Yeah, and I would certainly say Burlington is, you know, for the better part, a suburb of Toronto. We're kind of on the outskirts of it. But it can be. And I know from when I was living in Toronto, it was the same thing, you know, in a similar area as you are, where it's just, you got all the standard businesses, and especially if you don't drive or you can't get around easily, you're going to have a harder time kind of supporting those smaller businesses. Now, thankfully, in Burlington, there are still quite a few independent businesses and stuff that are in and around downtown that you can go to rather easily, and you can kind of shop there, you can do things there. But like, for instance, the apiary I was talking about, I'll shout them out because they were great, Backed by Bees. They are literally in the middle of nowhere. They're in the northeast part of Burlington, almost on Milton, just nothing but farmland. Obviously, you need space for bees.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't get there otherwise if I didn't get a ride with my friends.
It's true. It would be a real sting to try and get out there on your own.
Yeah, yeah. But I heard such a buzz about it that I had to check it out myself. And so it was one of those things. I was happy I was able to get out there. But there wouldn't have been in any public transit or anything. I would have to have Ubered out there. And then you're adding to a cost. And then,
well, yeah, it's not a hive of activity.
we could keep this going all day, but let's keep it short and sweet, Dave. Okay,
you'd really have to comb the white pages to find a way out there.
okay, I'll spare the listeners before we lose any more to all the bad puns.
I think we're just showing off our stripes.
I bravo, bravo, so Dave. Funny. You just keep giving and giving and giving. Yeah, but. I'm going to need you to move on to the next part of this, but as I was saying, you know, it can be hard to support local businesses, but thankfully, you know, as Nizreen talked about with the advent of online growth in businesses, that there is more opportunity, there's more diversity, especially since the pandemic, where, you know, these small businesses really had to adapt to being able to get their services out there when people couldn't physically come into the shops. So there are other ways that you can support them. You can go online. You can check out their online shops and get things shipped to you if you can't physically make it there.
Yeah, I find online, it's been a bit of a double-edged sword because it's become really easy to keep using major retailers in the online world. But you're right. It has allowed for a little bit of reach from some of these smaller businesses. Ramya, how has online impacted your experience in trying to support local?
Like, when I think online, my experience has been finding promotions through social media. So, you know, for example, in the wintertime, I'm always trying to find somebody making local treats, right? The hot chocolate bombs is a good example a couple of years ago, things like that. And people promote all over social with local businesses. You can literally type in, you know, GTA hot chocolate bombs and find several people just putting up their businesses, promoting. And sometimes they'll deliver. Sometimes you got to go pick it up. So I agree with you that, like, driving can be a major issue when it comes to actually collaborating with these people or buying their products. But I found that I can still get a hold of somebody somewhere who is willing to deliver, maybe for an extra fee, or ship, right? Like, like local soaps and things like that are usually easily shippable. So, yeah.
Nazreen, you're the one who kind of mentioned the way that online has influenced the way you're engaging with local business. Scratch a little bit deeper on that one. How are you using online to try and be a little more supportive of small business?
I'm so glad you brought up the inaccessibility of, like, websites, because I think that's a big problem that a lot of these small businesses have. So basically I go through Instagram. I think that's my main source when it comes to that. And I look at their website. If I find that it's just inaccessible, I DM the business and I'm like, hey, I'm looking for this, that. What can you provide for me? And this is why I just can't use your website. Like, just let me know if you have this sort of thing and how I can buy it. So they provide me with pictures, descriptions, and how to purchase this item. So it's not that difficult to kind of go around it. I know there's so many glitches in these websites, or they're not thinking of accessibility. It's a good way to DM them. I think that's a perfect communication. Like, they're really quick on that. And that's what I love about small businesses. I feel like they're very active on social media to try to build their business.
Yeah, the way to engage with your clients on social is a total game changer. Alex, you're the one who raised this topic on the antenna, so that means you get last word on this one. How do you engage with small businesses at an online level? Because it sounds like a little bit like it's a false binary, that it needs to be one or the other, but they can intersect.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when it comes to trying to support small businesses, I will look there first when I'm trying to find either a gift or trying to find something specific, because you're going to have a better chance of finding something a bit more unique, a bit more thoughtful, as I think it might have been Ramya who talked about it, where, you know, there's a bit more care and attention paid to it. They're a bit more unique in the type of items you can get, like I mentioned with Backed by Bees. Like, there's a lot of cute little knickknacks and stuff that would make great gifts. So I think starting in trying to identify some small businesses where you can start off and look, and then if you can't find it, okay, you look to the other major websites or the other major stores to try to find what you're looking for. But use it as a first stop to get an idea or inspiration and then move on from there.
Alex, thank you for pollinating this conversation.
Thank you for all the puns, Dave. I can't get enough.
I do what I can. Nazreen, thank you for this. Have a great day.
You too.
Ramya, you don't get to go away just yet. What's coming up on Kelly and Ramya at 2 p.m. Eastern Time on AMI TV and AMI Audio?
Okay. We're talking about proximity and transparency because kind of like what I've been talking about, this is a food trend for 2023. And actually our nutritionist Julia Caranches is bringing this up with us. We're also meeting social media influencer Mara Hutchinson, and she's joining us to talk about her channel, her content, also her time on We Are a Family on AMI TV. And it's book club time, Dave. So we're discussing Misery by Stephen King. There's a lot of discussion around this. Jacob Szymanski was a recommender of the book. He's our technical producer on AMI Audio, and he's going to join us for the convo.
Going old school with a little bit of Misery. Yeah. I love it. Ramya, thank you for this. Have a great show.
Thank you.
That's Ramya Amuthan, the co-host of Kelly and Ramya, which comes your way 2 p.m. Eastern time on AMI. Coming up next, it's news quiz time, putting contestants Alicia Yardley, Greg David, and Alex Smythe to the test. This is Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. Welcome back. It's Now with Dave Brown on AMI TV. It's Tuesday. It's the last segment of the show. You know what that means. Let's fire up the weekly news quiz. Ooh, that's right. The weekly news quiz brought to you by Paul Daniel. A couple of neat contestants joining us this week, including your reigning champion, Alex Smythe. Hello, Alex.
Hey, Dave.
We've got Greg David joining the show from the Ottawa area up there in Chelsea, Quebec. Hello, Greg.
Thanks for having me.
And a first-time contestant on the weekly news quiz, at least in the Now with Dave Brown era of the show, it's Alicia Yardley. Alicia, how are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks. I'm excited to dethrone the reigning champ.
Oh, boy. You know, it's not as glamorous as it sounds because we might invite you back. That's the danger. That's the danger. If you win, you might get invited back. Let's share the rules of the quiz. There are three rounds of questions with three questions per round. Each question comes with three multiple choice options. If you answer the question without hearing the options, you get 2 points. If you need to hear the options and get it right, you get one. If you get it wrong, we move on and until the point is awarded. The contestants was drawn by Paul's wife, Mary Daniel, to avoid any controversy or favoritism. The order will be Alex, Greg, and Alicia. Alex, question number one of round number one. Last week, some faculty members at this Atlantic University went on strike. What university is it?
I'm going to take a stab in the dark, Dalhousie University.
That is incorrect. So next crack goes to Greg David.
I will take the choices, please.
Was it Cape Breton? Was it the University of Prince Edward Island, or was it Dalhousie?
Let's say University of Cape Breton.
That is correct. In a statement following the strike, the union said it's seeking a pay raise in the deal. Should be mentioned Memorial in Newfoundland and Labrador also on strike. So it could have been a bit of a trick question there. I would have given anybody the ding for either Memorial or Cape Breton. But that was well done by Greg. So 1 point for Greg, who gets question number two of round number one. Greg, the U.S. Department of Transportation is investigating which airline for possibly breaking federal law by knowingly offering unrealistic scheduling during the holiday debacle.
Ooh, I really want to take a stab at it, but I don't want to gamble with that point, so I'll take the choices, please.
Was it Delta, United, or Southwest?
Ooh, I want to say South. I'm going to say Delta.
That is incorrect. Alicia, you get a crack at this. Was it United or Southwest?
I'm going to say Southwest.
That is correct. 1 point for Alicia. Southwest canceled more than 16,000 flights in late December. Question number three, going to Alicia, going to the sports world. The NBA fined Golden State Warriors Stephen Curry $25,000 for throwing this into the stands during last Wednesday's game against the Memphis Grizzlies. What did he throw?
Can I get the options, please?
Was it a towel? Was it a mouthpiece or a basketball?
I'm going to guess towel.
That is incorrect. Alex, a chance to steal a point.
I'm going to say mouthpiece.
That is correct. 1 point for Alex. Got a 1-1-1 tie after round one with just 74 seconds left in what had been a close game. Curry was ejected for throwing the mouthpiece, frustrated at his team's unproductive offense. So after one round, 1-1-1, all square with question number one of round number two going to Greg. Oh gosh, I've got to get closer to my screen to read this properly. Amira El-Gawabi was appointed to a new position with the Canadian government. Greg, what is that position?
I'll take the options, please. Not even going to hazard a guess.
Is it a special representative on global warming, Canadian ambassador to the United Arab Emirates, or a special representative on combating Islamophobia?
Let's go with option B, please.
That is incorrect. Alicia, an opportunity to steal a point here.
It is C, the combating Islamophobia.
That is correct. 1 point for Alicia. And we'll be talking to Fareed Khan of Canadians United Against Hate about that appointment a little bit later in the week on this show. So 2 points for Alicia now with a lead. And question number two of round number two going to Alicia. Alicia, last Wednesday, Chris Hipkins was sworn in as Prime Minister of this Commonwealth country. Which country was it?
Can I have the options, please?
Was it Australia, Antigua and Barbuda, or New Zealand?
I'm going to say New Zealand.
That is correct. Hipkins was appointed successor to Jacinda Ardern, who'd resigned earlier this month. So, Alicia, with a commanding lead here, 3 points to 1-1 here as we enter question number three of round number two, heading to Alex. Alex, which federal entity's employees are asking for a series of pay bumps worth more than 30% of current wages to keep with inflation, a request some observers have described as unprecedented?
Yes. I know this, and I... The problem is I can't remember this specific one. I'll know when I hear it, so can I get the options?
Is it Canada Post, the Canada Revenue Agency, or the Immigration and Refugee Board of Canada?
It's a Canada Revenue Agency, which was a part of the CBSA once upon a time.
Well, there it is. Okay. Yeah. Well done. Bang. Well,
does he get an extra point for that?
No. No, we don't just give
up. I'm trying to go for it.
We don't just give up willy-nilly points here for bonus knowledge. So that puts Alex at 2 points. The union representing tens of thousands of Canada Revenue Agencies says it wants to bring in salaries in lines with the Canada Border Services Agency. There you go. The little bonus point that Alex had mentioned. Okay. So after two rounds of play, we have Alicia with 3 points, Alex with two, and Greg with one. Anybody's game with three questions left on the board. Alicia, you get the first crack at this one. Oh, another opportunity for me to lean closer to the screen and read this. Charles McGonigal, a former leader in FBI counterintelligence, has been indicted for conspiring to violate U.S. sanctions by taking secret payments from an associate of which leader?
Can I get the options?
Is it Vladimir Putin, Kim Jong-un, or Recep Tayyip Erdogan?
I'm going to guess Erdogan.
That is incorrect. Alex, a crack at this for a steal.
Yes, this is Vladimir Putin.
That is correct. McGonigal was also charged with concealing secret payments of $225,000 that he allegedly received from Albanian intelligence operatives. Alex, here's an opportunity for you. Now tied for the lead with a chance to get really up on this one. Question number two of round number three. Millions of people in which country went without electricity or internet during a 12-hour blackout last week?
I'll need the options, Dave.
Was it Israel? Was it Pakistan? Or was it Bangladesh?
Geez, I have no idea. So I'm literally taking a swing here. I am going to go with Israel.
That is incorrect. Greg, an opportunity for you to get this match a little bit closer.
What were the options, Dave?
Pakistan or Bangladesh?
Let's go with Pakistan.
That is correct. Officials had shut down the power overnight to conserve fuel, but weren't able to get the system back online. Very, very good. Let's head over to round number three. Question number three of round number three with Alex and Alicia, both at 3 points. Greg at two. Greg can flat out win this thing if he guesses correctly without the options, or we get a three-way tie, and we do have tiebreaker questions available. So, Greg, Ottawa area MPP... Ottawa area MPP Lisa McLeod spoke last week about how it was a nightmare running for re-election in 2022 while struggling with this particular condition. What is the condition?
I should have paid more attention to my local politics just down the road for me. I have to go with the options, Dave.
Is it bipolar disorder, rheumatoid arthritis, or effects of long COVID?
Let's go with B, rheumatoid arthritis.
Ooh, that is incorrect. Man. Alicia, an opportunity to steal the point and win the game.
I'm going to say long COVID.
That is incorrect, thus giving Alex the win via a default point. I shouldn't be so joyous as I talk about bipolar disorder. My apologies. Yes. The Progressive Conservative MPP spoke to TVO about running for re-election while also dealing with bipolar disorder, calling it the toughest election campaign yet. So with that, the defending champion continues to be our winner, and the winner is... Alex Smythe with the big default points win. Congratulations, sir.
The two sweetest words in the English language, default, Dave, according to Homer Simpson.
I think wrapping this thing up on a Simpsons quote is the absolute way to go. Alex, congratulations on the win.
Thank you.
Greg, thank you for participating. You made that real close. You had a big opportunity for a win there. Just a little bit more CBC Ottawa and you'd be all set.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Dave.
And Alicia, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show today. Thank you for taking part in the quiz. We've got about 30 seconds on the clock. You went to go see Joseph in the amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat a couple weekends ago in Toronto. How was the show?
It was fabulous. I had such a good time. I originally saw it in, I want to say 92 when Donny Osmond played Joseph.
Oh my gosh.
Oh my God. That was a performance. But I mean, this was great. It was a touring company, I think from London. You know, there was tap dancing. Their vocals were phenomenal. Just some of the notes they were able to hit. Oh. And the staging was great. They threw confetti at the audience. Oh. And how could you not like confetti?
Oh, so, my gosh.
Highly recommend it if anybody wants to have a good bit of fun for 2 hours on a Saturday.
Alicia, thank you for playing along, and thank you for the theater review. We appreciate it.
Thank you. I look forward to my ongoing segment.
That's Alicia Yardley. You can hear from her on our show, and you can also catch her on Kelly & Company. That's all the time we have for the show today. Until we're back again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. Eastern Time, I'm Dave Brown, reminding you to play safe, play fair, but don't forget to have some fun. Hey, Dave Brown here. If you enjoy this podcast portion of our show, remember you can watch it live every day at 9 a.m. Eastern Time on AMI TV.
The Walrus is Canada's conversation, and you're invited to take part. Download AMI's Voices of the Walrus, where professional narrators read selected articles from the magazine. Available wherever you download your AMI podcasts.